Hi everyone, welcome to the newest edition of the SmackDown Summary. My name is Kenny McIntosh. I am coming to you live from Newcastle, England, while I sit under a desk at the day job working for the man. And I'm joined by Sondra, who's in Grand Rapids, Michigan, awake very early in the morning and not very happy about it. Hi, Sondra.
Hi, Kenny. I like the picture of you, like, sitting under a desk and, like, peeking out. Like, am I going to get caught recording this podcast? This is our dedication, folks.
When in reality, I'm literally sitting in one of their meeting rooms, not giving a fuck. Just doing my own podcast.
That's kind of what I figured was happening.
But this is SmackDown Summary episode 25. We're recording this the day after SmackDown. Another interesting show to talk about, for sure. From Baton Rouge, Louisiana, the home of WrestleMania 34, which is going to be in New Orleans.
It is.
Louisiana.
Yeah, officially now.
Yeah, very happy with that, because New Orleans is the best WrestleMania city in the world.
It basically means that after Orlando, I just have to start saving my money immediately again. So
yeah,
that I can
exactly.
Also go to New Orleans, because I really want to go to New Orleans. And even Mr. Saunders like, no, New Orleans is a place I would like to visit also, so he might come with us next year.
Wow. Well, the thing is, like, you're still in that zone where you've not been to WrestleMania yet, where you're like, I mean, I'm going to enjoy it, but then you're going to go and you're like, I had the best time.
Oh, no, I assume that I will have the best time.
And also, I thought this was just hysterical, because I actually do want to bring this guy up, because he wasn't on the show. But The Undertaker was obviously on Raw.
He sure was, wasn't he? I didn't watch Raw.
But what was interesting was Stephanie did bring up at the beginning of Raw about how, you know, Undertaker was last seen on SmackDown and all that kind of thing. And then he came out on Raw and sort of said, you know, The Undertaker goes where he wants to go and I'm entering myself in the Royal Rumble. Which is, I mean, I guess that's fine because, like, in the storyline or in the sort of wrestling universe, it does make sense that Undertaker's just kind of like, I'm the dead guy, I'll just go where I want. That's fine. But, like, the whole way they present it was really weird, because the last time he's on SmackDown, he's not been there since. And then he turns up on...
I mean, not only was he on SmackDown, he made a big deal of SmackDown being his home.
Exactly. So, and then by all accounts, you know, SmackDown is essentially where he's going to be in the lead-up to WrestleMania. That's what I think most people presume is going to be the case. But then he comes out and he does his whole thing. He's in the Rumble, that's fine. But then he's part of the press conference for WrestleMania 34.
Was he really?
And the best thing. So you know, they do the usual press thing. It's like, you know, here's Stephanie McMahon and Triple H and the New Day and Roman Reigns and all that sort of stuff. And I thought it was quite cool. They got Undertaker to be there because, you know, this was the site of the streak ending and all that sort of stuff. So it would be kind of cool to see what they would have him do at the WrestleMania that comes back to sort of the site of that wrestling moment or whatever.
Yeah,
so Undertaker
sense.
Comes out at the end. Undertaker comes out of the press conference and he's got the music and he's kind of like quite amped that he's there. He just says, there's only one, you know, WrestleMania is going to be in New Orleans. There's only one thing to say. And then he just leans in to the microphone and the Undertaker stand and says, let the good times roll. And then leaves. It's like my favorite thing. Because I just imagine there's this like PR woman backstage saying, right, Undertaker, we want to get over this a party atmosphere. So can you just say, like, let the good times roll? And he's like, okay.
The only thing that would make that better is if Roland started immediately afterward.
And then he just
let the good times rollin'.
I would love that so much. It's not even funny.
I mean, if that ever happens, Kenny, send me that clip immediately, because you know how much I love that song.
That's true. Well, who doesn't love that song if you're our kind of age group?
Yeah, that's true. My husband's too old, he doesn't like it.
Yeah, I mean, I was very young when I saw it, you know. Same thing, almost.
This is my favorite Kenny McIntosh trope, right? That Kenny's so much younger than the rest of us just because he was born in 1985. Like, on the WrestleMania 9 review, you're like, David, you're like older than me. So you were what, 9 or 10 in 1993? No, David was born 4 months before you.
He doesn't look like he was born 4 months before me, let's be honest.
It was just my favorite thing, because this is like me yelling at my phone in my car going, David was born in September, you were born in January, he was not 9 or 10 in 1993.
The best thing is, for whatever reason, the last couple of weeks, there's been various conversations that I've had where it's come up like, What age are you, Kenny? And I'm like, 28, 27. And people go, oh, but nobody bats an eyelid.
Well, I mean, you look like you could be 27 or 28, just to stroke that ego of yours right now. But
that's the key, because I need to keep making sure that's the case, because if it's not the case, I need to start putting the work in. I need to start getting the fucking creams and all that and start making the face look a bit better. You know, I don't care if my tits are at my knees, as long as my face looks okay. That's the key.
You can hide the tits, anyway. Right?
you can always tuck the tits in. Anyway, back to SmackDown from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We open up the show with the commentator's orgy that is Mauro Ranallo, JBL, David Otunga, and Tom Phillips. And then Dean Ambrose comes out. He's going to host the Ambrose Asylum, new Intercontinental Champion. He was going to be the first champion in SmackDown to enter the Royal Rumble match. He was going to be in there. He had an alligator's head in his chair because, you know, it's Dean Ambrose, called him Maurice.
I have an alligator head just like that, actually.
I love that you and Dean Ambrose have something in common.
I know, it's weird, doesn't it? Makes me laugh. I will say this for Dean Ambrose, the Ambrose Asylum started, and I didn't cringe immediately. That's how good he's been lately.
Yeah, he's still zany, which is fine, because, you know, you shouldn't just completely not be the character you were, but he's tweaked it enough that it's more bearable. So.
It's toned down, but he makes it consistent. It's okay for him to be zany, he just needs to pick a level of zaniness and stay there, I think.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Then the Miz and Maurice come out, and they're dressed like they're in mourning.
Because
so
remember
good.
Last time he lost the Intercontinental Championship? They were in mourning. Brilliant.
They're all dressed in black. Miz has these phenomenal polka dot socks on, which are just exceptional. So Miz also announces his entry into the Royal Rumble match, talks about Ambrose stealing his title, and Miz basically says, you know, he's going to tie him up in legalities for years, but you know, before that, he's going to give Ambrose the chance to do the right thing and hand the belt back over to the Miz. And Ambrose sort of teasing, will he do it? And then Ambrose is like, you know, you're right. And Miz is like, I knew you were a sensible guy and you'd do the right thing. And then Ambrose pulls out a bag and pulls out his own framed participation award and gives it to the Miz and says, and then says, you know, you tried. Miz is just so angry, attacks Ambrose, punching him in the head. But then, you know, he sets up Ambrose for a slap from Maurice, and Maurice accidentally slaps Miz. Ambrose hits the dirty deeds on Miz, and then Maurice is in there, and Ambrose hands her the participation award. He leaves the ring, and she slams that participation award on the mat, and it, like, bounces.
It doesn't even break. Great. Does
no,
it?
It like, bounces.
Yeah.
It's almost like she has such venom in her voice and her feelings and her body that she makes, like, practically a mirror bounce. Like, she just does it. Gravity doesn't exist. What did you think of this as an opening segment and the continuation of the Dean Ambrose Miz story?
I loved it. I loved everything about it. And, I mean, again, like, that's praise to Dean Ambrose for being a more consistent character and being more interesting lately, right? Because I've not been a big Dean Ambrose fan, but I'm really enjoying Dean Ambrose versus The Miz. And, I mean, would I like for Miz to still be champion? Ideally, in an ideal world, yes, because I'm more into The Miz than I am into Dean Ambrose. But Miz being this super angry and Dean Ambrose being able to get to Miz like this is also pretty beautiful. And they're telling a good story with it, so I mean, I really can't complain about any of this. I thought it was perfect. And, I mean, Maurice just being so beside herself with anger. I mean, again, like, a high compliment I can pay to this is I absolutely popped when Dean Ambrose ducked and Maurice slapped Miz, because their character roles are so well-defined. Miz and Maurice are the bad guys, and there is no gray area here. They're the bad guys. I should want to see them fall. Right? And they're so good at being bad that I do kind of want to see them fall. Like, I cheer when bad stuff happens to them. And it's still a little bit of a conflict because I love Miz so much and I haven't loved Dean Ambrose so much, but they're doing this so well that I'm kind of almost cheering for Dean Ambrose now. And I don't know what's happening in the world other than good, perfect storytelling. Thank you, SmackDown.
Yes, I thought it was really good. It kept it going. I think the key here is they didn't use Renee, because I, if you're going to use Renee, you only use it for a reason. So I like that was kind of the case.
She's still quite removed and wants to remain professional. Because if there is a moment where she gets involved in it again, and again, like, the line they're walking is so perfect. She mentions on Talking Smack, she's like, I just have to gloat about this for a second. Maurice slapped Miz, and it made me really, really happy. and then she moved on. And that was that. And it didn't need to be any more than that. And I really love it.
Exactly. Yeah, it really worked. Really good. So then we get a video package for the Nikki Bella Natalya feud, which, you know, at the beginning hadn't been tremendous, but it, in some aspects. But it really picked up last week with strong promos from both of them. So there was kind of a, there was a point to prove here, I think, for both of them. Mm-hmm. And then we see Nikki walking backstage and Natalya just attacks her from behind, throws her into a wall. Nikki's lying there in agony. And then Natalya's like, see you out there, Nikki. And walks away. Oh, Natalya, what a glorious bitch you are.
Mm-hmm.
And then Natalya comes out for the match, and then Nikki comes out. She looks determined. She looks angry, as she should. They brawl. She's like, really looks like she's giving her some stiff shots here, as she should.
The bell doesn't even get a sign.
Yeah, she should be. She got attacked. The bell doesn't even get a chance to ring. Nikki's sort of like showing signs of life, and Natalya's trying to like get away. And eventually, as referees were sort of there, you know, Natalya chop blocks the injured knee of Nikki and then ends up with putting a sharpshooter on her on the floor. And Natalya leaves her laying. And, you know, I thought it was really well done. I thought it was a really nice intensity to the angle. And I think it was, in hindsight now, better that they didn't give you the match and better that we just kind of got this continuation of the story. What did you think? I think this is, for me, almost becoming the best women's feud on SmackDown for me. I think it's actually really starting to make contention, which shows how far it's come along.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with the women's feuds on SmackDown is I'm so into both of them right now that it varies from week to week, right?
It's like which choosing is, your favorite kid.
It really is, and that's good, right? Like, it's not, they're both so awful that I have to pick one. No, I'm so intrigued by both of them that I don't know if I can choose my favorite right now. Last week, I would have said Becky versus Alexa. This week, I would say I have no idea because both feuds are so intriguing right now. This was an excellent brawl. Really, really good. They had multiple referees pulling them apart. Nikki was, you know, beside herself again, as she should be. And oh boy, do I want to see a match between the two of them. And whether it has a stipulation or not, it doesn't have to. But I'm just, like, clamoring for this match now because I wanted the match this week. I was looking forward to it. I said last week, like, oh, Nikki Bella versus Natalya. I'm really into that match because I, you know, even if I wasn't as into the feud as Becky versus Alexa last week, I was still pretty into Natalya versus Nikki Bella. But now after that brawl, I want to see them get their hands on each other again in a proper match. And I want to see Nikki tear Natalya apart. And I think it could be really good because there's an intensity to it and there's passion to it. So, yeah, I really like this. I think it was smart to do this angle to kind of ramp up, you know, emotion and escalate things even more because now I'm even more interested in seeing the two of them fight again. So we've gotten at least another week of television out of the whole thing, which is kind of the point in episodic storytelling, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, and the good thing is you've got Natalya in there who's such a sort of experienced veteran that she can sort of carry Nikki to a higher standard of match, which helps everybody. So it's good. It's good stuff. We got Dasha Fuentes interviewing Dolph Ziggler, who, you know, she was trying to get an explanation for what happened last week. Ziggler just walked away without saying anything. We got a match with Dolph Ziggler and Kalisto. Ziggler was wearing the same attire that he usually does, same music, all that sort of stuff. I think some people were thinking there'd be a change. Anyway, we had a Kalisto and Dolph Ziggler match, and Ziggler was quite brutal with Kalisto. Everybody kept tweeting me saying they thought I was having an orgasm because after Kalisto ended up making like a lucky rollover from a crucifix into a crucifix for the win, Ziggler just went mental and just started punching Kalisto and smacking him with a chair. You know, really going after him. Apollo Crews did come out to make the save. And Ziggler and Crews, a little thing, but Ziggler ended up sort of laying Crews out with the chair as well. Really sort of going to town on the babyfaces here. I mean, I've not seen Talking Smack yet. I've not had a chance. So if you have, maybe Sondra, you fill me in on it, because I know he was on there. But what do you think of Dolph's first week in this sort of character change?
It's interesting because Dolph Ziggler's character change is, like, it was a very definitive heel turn last week, but what I like about what he's doing is his character's still fairly consistent. Because on Talking Smack, he just almost seemed lost when he was on Talking Smack because he was like, no, you're right, like, what am I even doing? You know, and I can't remember exactly all what he said, but it wasn't that far off from the standard babyface promo, but it had an edge to it. And it was kind of like, you know, what am I doing? You know, people see me and they do these bad things. You know, they're gonna, you know, they might boo me because they're like, you know, like I'm turning on Kalisto or whatever. But he's like, I also think they might be happy because that's the Dolph Ziggler they know. Like, almost like he had lost himself for a long time in this terrible babyface character, right? So he's still that Dolph Ziggler, and he's just kind of acknowledging the fact that he was shite for a long time. And I think it's a really interesting choice to turn him heel and then still have him lose the first week, because the downward spiral of Dolph Ziggler doesn't seem to be over, but it seems to have more of a purpose now. So I'm intrigued to see where it goes. And I mean, my greatest hope for this is that it could give Kalisto and Apollo Crews potential personalities, maybe.
Well, I mean, I don't know if Dolph Ziggler was a medical worker here, but maybe he could.
But at least it's a story.
I mean, that, I think the thing I like about it, though, is that, you know, Dolph Ziggler, I'm making up Sondra stories in my head here around what's actually happened.
It's the best way to do things.
That is the best way. But, like, I felt like last week, you know, Dolph Ziggler, the story was he used to be a good guy who, you know, shook everybody's hands, kissed all the babies, and that never really got him anywhere. So he had to kind of, like, he snapped and sort of, I'll just think about myself from now on, and that'll get me where I need to be. And what was clever about this week was he tries that a little bit, and he still gets beat by Kalisto, you know? And then he snaps and smacks Kalisto with a chair, which, of course, I enjoyed. Let's not lie to ourselves.
Of course.
But then, you know, Apollo Crews came out. He tried to help. He was also laid out with a chair. So now we're in a point where Dolph Ziggler sort of, is he going to stop being half pregnant and fully go heel? That's the story. So I'm kind of into it.
I like that the story is more complex than the standard, I turn heel, I have a new attitude, and now I win. And there's nothing wrong with, I turn heel, I have a new attitude, and now I win. Right? Like, that's kind of what the Usos did. That's kind of, you know, when Natalia turned heel, that's kind of what happened. Is like, I am now a villain, so everything's completely different right away. I like that there's room for both types of heel turns, because this is more complex, and it's more of a slow burn, and it's more of a gradual thing. Even though there was a very definitive moment where he turned heel, I think his character's still undergoing change, and I really like seeing that progression, because I think there's, you know, possibility for interesting story there.
For sure. I concur.
And I also, I like the alliance of Apollo Crews and Kalisto, just because it gives them something to latch onto, and it's sort of building the world of SmackDown, like the backstage locker room world. Okay, Apollo Crews and Kalisto are friends. We can maybe keep this in mind and use it when we need to. Not that they have to be a tag team, because I don't think they should be a tag team. I mean, maybe they would. That might be interesting. I don't know. But I like when there are relationships between characters.
People are friends.
Yeah.
We got Dasha again speaking to American Alpha. They talked about, you know, the Wyatt's been really intimidating, but, you know, they're the alphas as long as they have the tag titles. And Chad Gable said there's some cockiness, it's the truth, and they're ready to go to war tonight with the Wyatt's, which I guess we'll get into when we get to that match. We also had John Cena speak to Renee Young. He talked about, you know, the lone wolf is targeting him, and talked about the match with Baron Corbin. Talked a little bit about AJ Styles, said it's been a long time since he's had to prove himself. But he was fired up, and that's not good for Baron Corbin. And, you know, does this sort of the time is now thing. Pretty kind of pedestrian Cena promo, I thought. But that was
fine.
Yeah,
it was,
you know,
a step back.
It was cool.
I think, just because it was a little more standard John Cena fare than what we've been getting. Like, this felt hokier than what we've been getting recently.
Yeah, there was nothing really to grab on to here, or to really sink his teeth into, so it did feel like a little bit of a step back.
It kind of gave me the impression that he's not taking Baron Corbin seriously.
Yes, I got the same impression.
and I don't like that, because what's been compelling about Cena has been him taking things seriously, right? Like, that's been the cool thing about what he's been doing.
He's the best. We then get a one pre-tape where Bray Wyatt says, you know, he hopes that American Alpha have enjoyed their time with the belts because, you know, we're here. And Randy Orton was obviously Randy Orton and Luke Harper were there as well. But for the tag match, it was going to be Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton in the match with Luke Harper on the outside. The tag team title rematch, Sandra.
Yeah, I love that Randy Orton, by the way, is the one that said, we're here. Because I can't get over how much I love seeing Randy Orton do the Wyatt catchphrases. For some reason, it just makes me giddy every time. Like, when he went, run. I mean, especially because he kind of, like, usurped Luke Harper's spot by doing the run thing last week, right? But then him doing the, we're here. I don't know why. It just gives me chills. I love it.
It was cool. So we obviously had the tag team title match. American Alpha against the Wyatts and Randy Orton and Bray. Goes about 15 minutes. Pretty good match. Jason Jordan just continued to make me think that he's going to be a world champion one day. I just love him so much. What did you think of this match? Because obviously in the end, Randy Orton was setting up for the finish when he was distracted by Luke Harper arguing with the referee, and that allowed Chad Gable to roll up Randy Orton and pin him for American Alpha to retain the titles. Before we get to the post-match, what do you think of the match itself?
The match itself I loved. I really loved a lot. It made me want to see more of Chad Gable versus Bray Wyatt. It really made me want to see more of Chad Gable versus Randy Orton. I mean, any combination of these guys I thought worked very, very well. I thought they had good chemistry, and I was so into the story because I had no idea what was going to happen here. I mean, it would have been kind of a kick to the gut to just take the titles back off American Alpha right away, right after they won them. That wouldn't have been very cool, but also it would have been a proper kick in the gut because you're supposed to be upset about stuff like that. So with the way this story is going and the way it's been so unpredictable, I was just along for the ride, right? And sitting forward in my chair going, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And so, I mean, the match itself, I really, really enjoyed. Definitely. And I was happy when American Alpha won. They pinned Randy Orton again, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, he's just doing jobs all over the shop. Happy to put in a shift. What was interesting was after the match, Orton's really fired up, because obviously Harper kind of cost him the match. Mm-hmm. And he's sort of like jaw-jacking back and forth to Harper, Wyatt standing between them, Orton's trying to get around Wyatt to get to Harper, Harper's trying to kick Orton. Like, it's getting out of control. And Wyatt's just sort of like trying to help out, and then Harper's yelling like, do something to Orton. And in the end, Wyatt just like had enough and he's left. And Orton's watching him go, Harper's trying to leave, there's a lot of dissension in the Wyatts. I thought it was a good start to the story. I'm hoping that they don't break them up too soon. I'd quite like to see it play out for a while. But it was compelling to watch.
Yeah, I don't want this to be the breakup moment at all, because I think that there's still a lot more to do here. But, I mean, Luke Harper kicked Bray Wyatt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, holy cow, Kenny. Luke Harper kicked Bray Wyatt. I'm so all in. And now, you know, the Wyatts can move away from the tag title scene, potentially, and have, I don't know, another story. Or maybe they won't move away from the tag title scene. Maybe we'll get more of American Alpha versus the Wyatts. I don't know. I don't even care.
Which I'm fine with.
I'm so excited.
I'm fine with more of it.
I'm totally fine with more of it, too. I'm fine with kind of whatever they're doing here. More, please.
Yeah.
And the Wyatts are finally compelling and doing a thing and having complex interactions. And isn't that all I've ever wanted?
It's a lovely time to be alive, Sandra. We got a video package of Baron Corbin. And then we got a historical sort of John Cena package as well. But then we got a backstage thing between Becky Lynch. We got a backstage thing between Becky Lynch and Alexa Bliss with Daniel Bryan in the middle. Can I ask you a question, Sandra?
Sure.
What did you think of Daniel Bryan's attire as the general manager here? Because I was watching this with a friend, and my friend said, he looks like he's going to the shops.
Well, I mean, Daniel Bryan's always kind of a casual GM.
He is. That's one of the things I like about him. He's just a bit cash, you know?
I feel like it would be disingenuous for Daniel Bryan to come out in suits and everything. I mean, he's not a suit kind of a guy, right? Like,
He rocks a checked shirt very well, though.
He really does. I mean, he came out to retire in a checked shirt, and I thought it worked quite well for him. I wouldn't want Daniel Bryan any other way.
No, I love him. But Becky is sort of watching the footage from last week. Brian's trying to figure out who La Luchadora is. He was asking if it was Eva Marie. Alexa Bliss shows up. They go back and forth, sort of trying to figure out who it is. And, you know, Becky's showing Brian, you know, I tapped out Alexa Bliss. You know, she was La Luchadora. Like, I tapped it out. And Brian said that next week we would get the SmackDown Women's Championship on the line in a steel cage. Becky Lynch was very happy. Alexa Bliss wasn't. They had a really kind of fun... I'll be honest, sometimes I think Becky Lynch's accent goes a bit OTT for me. But for the most part, I thought on Talking Smack when they were having a back and forth...
Is OTT over the top? Is that what the kids are saying these days?
Yeah. Do you guys not say that?
No. I say over the top. I say words.
Oh, God. Sorry, Mrs. Alexander Rusev, Mrs. Antonio Cesaro, Mrs. Adrian Neville.
No, it's not just that. No, I genuinely don't know all of the acronyms that people do. Like, sometimes it's really hard to read Twitter.
No, I always forget what SMH is. I've forgotten again.
What is SMH? Is that shake my head?
Shake my head, yes. I always forget what it is.
As everyone's shaking their heads at us going, oh, for fuck's sake, you guys, you're so old. Why don't you know this?
Well, I mean, OTT, over the top. But, like, I thought that Becky and Alexa had a really good interaction talking smack as well, where, you know, Becky's kind of saying, you know, do what you want with the belt. Take it to the bathroom. Wash out the crap from your mouth. I'm coming to get it next week. And Alexa Bliss is like, oh, I'll have it for the next week. And maybe in that week you can come up with an excuse of why you're not the champion. It was really good.
It was really good. And how excited am I for a steel cage match between the two of them? I love it because they hate each other right now. And they absolutely have a right to hate each other right now. I mean, Becky Lynch has effectively been screwed out of the title multiple times. Alexa Bliss is this entitled little pixie prick, right? And she's an awful person. She's terrible. And I love it. I love how terrible she is because she's just kind of managed by hook or by crook to keep this title. And even though she keeps tapping out to Becky Lynch, it has never actually made her lose the title or anything. And she won it again on what could be considered kind of a fluke. I mean, winning it in a tables match isn't the same as pinning an opponent or even, like, climbing a ladder or whatever. Like, tables matches, we've talked about this before, like, tables matches, it's just so quick. It's like, will they go through the table? Will they not? And it's just that one moment. You can't really build drama. You can't really build near falls because it's like,
well, the important thing about this match, though, is that the reason they're in a steel cage is because there's been so much interference from this La Luchadora.
Yeah, the cage match makes perfect sense, which is awesome. Like, it's not a stipulation, you know, it's not we're making history by being in a steel cage, right? It's not Happy December, it's Extreme Rules, or I think TLC, it's TLC, Happy December, you know. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice, I'm so excited. But it's not, you know, it's gimmick pay-per-view, so we need to do this. No, there's been plenty of interference. There are all these luchadoras running around, and we want to get Becky, and we want to get Alexa, and we want them in a cage, and we want them separate. Like, or separate from everything else, right? Separate from outside interference. Now, I assume that there will be at least one luchadora running about outside, slamming cage doors and whatnot. You know how we feel about the cage door here at Inside the Ropes. Worst thing in the entire world, right? But I mean, cage matches, of course, invite interference by the very virtue that they're supposed to prevent interference. Like, that's just something that WWE seems to do. And I mean, maybe other promotions do it too, I don't really know. But there are always people trying to climb in the cage or interfering on the outside, that kind of thing. I'm excited for shenanigans, and I'm so excited for this match. And, I mean, who knows what's going to happen? It could be a way for Alexa Bliss to, you know, escape the cage, hopefully not through the stupid fucking door, but it could be a chance for her to escape the cage and for Becky to say, she still hasn't, like, beaten me. She just climbed over the top. It could be, you know, La Luchadora slams the door on Becky Lynch to allow Alexa Bliss to do that. It could be Becky Lynch regaining the title. I don't know what's going to happen, and I love not knowing what's going to happen.
It's good stuff. Maybe La Luchadora next week will be Mickey James. There's all these different things could happen. It's fun. Yeah, it's good. I like it. I'm a fan. Now, there's something on SmackDown that I enjoyed, but I think I enjoyed it for the wrong reason. Oh, my fucking God. Fucking hell. CJ Lund. Oh, I was cackling. I've never rewound wrestling to such a degree as I did in this match. This was so good because it was so bad.
It was. Like,
so first of all, Carmella is with James Ellsworth, and she's against this kind of jobber who apparently is in fucking Shikara and Ring of Honor.
Yeah, I don't know
how the fuck she's in there, because here she was fucking the pits.
Yeah, I've really not seen much of her at all, but this was not great.
So she's there, and she's got this kind of, like, you know, 1940s look or something with her hair, and, like, she's got, like, an old one-piece on and all that, which is cool,
I loved it.
But the problem is, she was fucking terrible at wrestling. There was a point where she has to get outside the ring, and she just drops to the mat like a bomb, and then, like, runs out to the ring. And then, my favourite thing is when Carmella hits this kind of, I don't even know what the fuck you call it, some sort of suplexy thing, and, like, CJ Lund just, like, contorts her body, like, five different ways to fall to the mat. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. Like, it was so good. I rewound it literally 10 times. And it got funnier every time. Because it looked like she was drunk. And James Ellsworth tried to grab her foot, he missed the foot.
Yeah.
It was just absolute cluster.
It really was an absolute cluster. Yeah, JBL on commentary the whole time calling her Millie Burke and, like, saying how she looks old. And I was like, you stop it, JBL. I loved her whole aesthetic. I thought that was great. I thought she looked incredible. If, you know, the wrestling could have matched, that would have been lovely.
I think, you know, a gimmick like that should not really be a jobber, you know? Like, that's not a jobber gimmick. That's, like, quite an interesting look. But she was fucking terrible in the ring. But you know what? I kind of needed a laugh. So I was happy that she was absolute dog shit in the ring. And Carmella, you know, Carmella, to be fair to Carmella, Carmella got her through this. And there's also a tremendous point in the match where Carmella, like, smacks her head off the turnbuckle, and she does this thing where she's about to fall to the ground, but she just hangs onto the ropes and then, like, falls back up. Oh, absolutely awful. Glorious, though. Loved every second of it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Anything to add in this match?
Oh, no, I think you've pretty much covered it. Just, I want to see an old-timey lady wrestler.
Yeah, I would like to see. The thing is, like, I don't mean this in a bad way, right? But, you know, JBL's making fun of her the way she looks. JBL's got moves. So,
yes.
You know, get a grip. Carmella's backstage being giddy about sort of the win. And she says she's got something special for Ellsworth. Ellsworth, being the fucking idiot that he is, starts putting, like, fucking spray in his mouth to try and get a kiss. But then she said something where I finally was like, oh, I want to see this. She's going to take him on a shopping spree.
Now this means one of two things, Kenny.
Yes, exactly. You take it away, you know my mind.
I do. This either means we're going to get a makeover of James Ellsworth, or it means that Carmella's going to, you know, basically abuse James and go on a shopping spree for herself and make him carry all of her bags, right?
Either way, I'm in.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely.
Either way. I'm good with it. Do this. I would happily have them in skits.
Yeah.
Just keep them in skit form.
This is what I was hoping for. I mean, didn't I say I'm just like, I have no idea where this is going to go, but oh boy, am I excited to see, because it could be so kitschy and ridiculous. Like, I think that's kind of what we're getting. And I really like it. And
I hope so.
You know, and it's something for Carmella to do to stay in the, you know, in the public eye or whatever, even though she doesn't have a feud right now because there aren't enough women on SmackDown for her to be feuding with anyone. Because Naomi's injured, and the other four are in feuds with each other, and Eva Marie has just disappeared off the face of the earth or something. But, I mean,
yeah,
I'm all in. But it builds Carmella's character, which is great. Like, she's still doing stuff on the show, and I'm enjoying it. I'm all in for this Carmella James Ellsworth thing. Whatever happens next week, I'm actually really excited for it.
Then we got Baron Corbin doing a quick promo about the main event. Followed by AJ Styles coming out, because AJ Styles, first of all, kind of had a quick thing with Corbin where he said, you know, tonight's Corbin's night, and he'd be on commentary and say, you know, do your best AJ Styles impression by beating up John Cena. And we had John Cena versus Baron Corbin, and this is probably the first thing on SmackDown Live in a little while, which annoyed me. And I don't usually get annoyed at SmackDown Live. I didn't like that John Cena beat Baron Corbin. And it's not because I'm like, you can't pin Baron Corbin. It's not that, but, like, I feel like he pinned him with relative ease, and that was really my issue with it. To be honest, I'm curious.
Five knuckle shuffle, attitude adjustment, boom, done. I liked this match, and I was into it. I was really looking forward to this. I didn't mind it so much. Like, I knew that it would probably annoy some people that Baron Corbin got pinned, and I'm not super thrilled with it. Like, I was actually kind of surprised that this match had a finish, especially with AJ Styles on commentary. I was very surprised that this match had a finish at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think it hurts Baron Corbin to lose to John Cena. It would obviously do a lot more for Baron Corbin to beat John Cena. So I don't know. I mean, I don't have strong feelings against it. Like, I'm not raging or anything, being like, oh, how could you pin Baron Corbin right now? Or how could John Cena beat Baron Corbin? Like, he is John Cena, and maybe they want him to look dominant. But, I mean, the thing that's been so interesting about John Cena is that he hasn't been as dominant, and he has been vulnerable, and he has had to, you know, change his game a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it left me a little underwhelmed, I will say. It didn't make me super angry, but I also was like, oh, okay, so that's happened.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't think Baron Corbin is necessarily a great wrestler yet. Like, I think he's been put in situations where he's been able to succeed, you know, with the three-way and then with Dolph Ziggler. And I thought this match was going well, and then it just kind of ended quite quickly.
It seems truncated.
Yeah, I miffed a little bit in the sense of, like, it's cool John Cena beat. Like, I just would have liked to see more of a struggle or a battle to get there. I will say at least Cena didn't kick out of End of Days. At least there's that.
Oh, that would have made me angry. That would have made me really angry.
But, you know, at the end of the day, the thing is, they're building towards Cena and Styles. That's the program. So it is what it is. Overall, though, I thought it was a good episode of SmackDown. I don't think it was as strong as last week's, but I think it was still a good episode. And I enjoyed it.
I mean, it's hard to be as strong as last week's, because last week's was so good. But, I mean, it was It was another very, very good episode of SmackDown. AJ Styles on commentary, I thought, was very good, too.
He was really good. And also, just to take note, you know, Daniel Bryan was in one backstage segment where he made a match, and Shane McMahon hosted with Renee Young and Talking Smack. They both did a very good job. Raw, complete opposite. Stephanie McMahon killed the show.
Yeah, I've seen a few clips of Raw. I didn't watch Raw. I've only seen a few clips, and I've read some recaps and listened to a couple things, and I don't think I'm going to be watching Raw, because it sounds horrendous, and I really like the fact that on SmackDown we have authority figures who do their jobs, like Daniel Bryan manages generally, and the commissioner Shane McMahon entrusts the show to Daniel Bryan, and we're not just full of authority. Like, does Stephanie McMahon really give Mick Foley a performance review?
Yep, and then she basically says that, you know, if Undertaker doesn't show up, you know, what's she going to have to do? She blames him for everything. She's the worst. She's just the worst television character. She emasculates everybody, never gets any comeuppance. It's bullshit. Like, it's just so redundant, and yeah, it's annoying.
What even is the point? I mean, I will say my only complaint about Shane McMahon hosting Talking Smack, other than the general he is not Daniel Bryan, is that I was really looking forward to Daniel Bryan talking shit about The Undertaker being on Raw and not on SmackDown, and we didn't get that. They sort of glossed over it. Like, I mean, they mentioned it, but it was not nearly as snarky as it would have been if it were Daniel Bryan. So I felt like we were robbed of that. Maybe that's why he didn't host Talking Smack. They were like, we don't trust you with this.
Possibly. The Stephanie ammunition and The Undertaker thing was enough. But that's it for the SmackDown summary. We'll be back later on this week with the Retro Raw rundown. You can also get us on Patreon for bonus content at patreon.com/insidetheropes. We've got two reviews up from Shotgun Saturday Night in 1997, where you get weird stuff like a show in a cafe where Todd Pettengill and Honky Tonk Man do a duet. It's very bizarre. We review Royal Rumble 2000, where Sandra has to watch Royal Rumble 2000. And it's an interesting show because it's Sandra's first time watching a purely Attitude Era pay-per-view. We've jumped forward 3 years from what we do in Retro Raw. I am going to say that I would ask people, if possible, for now on, to not suggest a lot of Attitude Era stuff from like 1999, just because I think it will be kind of counterproductive to us doing the retro stuff. So if you have something else, that'd be a good choice. But we do have the Royal Rumble 2000 up there as well, so go check that out.
I think 2000 was far enough in the future that it kind of worked. Like, if it's too close to our timeline, then we don't really want to go there.
Exactly, exactly. But Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter? Because they might want to converse with you and tell you how lovely they think you are.
They might, or they might just want to be like, why are you making me hate The Undertaker? I just got a message from someone that was like, you're making me hate my hero because you make too much sense.
Well, to be fair though, like, the thing is, Sandra has never said that she hates The Undertaker. She dislikes the presentation of The Undertaker.
Yes.
There you go.
Very much so.
Trying to help you out.
Okay. And sometimes I don't like him.
Trying to be on your side.
I know. But...
anyway, sorry.
As a character, though, I mean, you have to admit, like, whatever. But find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyNC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. And did you say patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, or did you just say check us out on Patreon? I don't remember. I just said it. It's fine. Kenny, fine. Before we leave, can we talk about that Royal Rumble poster?
Yeah, I think we should. There's a few things to talk about. First of all, The Undertaker does not look like that anymore. That's not a problem.
No, he does not.
So, second of all, Brock Lesnar is not that tanned. Third of all, neither is Goldberg.
No.
And number four, let's pretend that this is not just a poster where names have been put together. Let's pretend this is a poster where, like, all these people were in a room and made to pose.
Mm-hmm.
Did AJ Styles turn up an hour late? Is that what happened?
Like, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. Because what is AJ Styles doing at the Royal Rumble, Kenny?
He's in the main event against John Cena for the WWE Championship.
Yeah, because who's the WWE Champion? That would be AJ Styles. All the way in the back. By R-Truth.
Do you know what? Initially, I saw it and I was so annoyed. And I thought, do you know what? I actually don't care. He's so good and he's done enough and people love him so much. Put him in the back of a fucking poster. People still like him more than most of the other fuckers that you have.
Oh, it's true. Like, I really hope that he takes this and just makes a dig about it. Like, that's what I really want, is for him to be like, put me on the back of the poster? Fuck you.
I don't know who it was, but the big shout out to somebody redid the poster where every head is AJ Styles.
Oh, really? I saw one where every head was Tyler Breeze and Fandango, and I liked that one quite a bit.
Of course you did. Of course that's what appears in your timeline.
It's funny because whenever I look at the Inside the Ropes Twitter timeline versus my timeline, they are vastly different. Like, I was comparing last night and I was like, wow. We follow some of the same people, but very few, it seems.
Yep, pretty much. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We hope that you've managed to, quell your anger of the Royal Rumble poster.
Well, my thing is, too, John Cena's up front. He's the only SmackDown guy up front. Otherwise, it's, like, all Raw. And John Cena and AJ Styles are nowhere near each other. They're the ones fighting. John Cena's not in the Royal Rumble. From this poster, you would assume that John Cena's in the Royal Rumble. Okay, now I'm done.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Bye. Southern boys with the final strength. Ain't nobody man enough to feel the pain. And you can be next, you better give respect. Cause ain't nobody breaking this redneck. No, they don't want none. No, they don't want none. They don't want none. No, they don't want none. They don't want none. No, they don't want none. They looking scared, no, they don't really want none. I'm a Mack truck, don't get run over. We some country boys working overtime, boys. Kings of the South, we never had nothing. Blue collar boys do it with our hands muddy. No, they don't want none. Oh, they don't.